This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Outdoors Podcast, your Northeast destination for hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation. I'm Chris, your host, and on this show, we break down the science, strategy, and real-world experience behind life in the woods and on the water. The goal is simple: to educate and empower the outdoor community to make informed, responsible decisions in the field. So grab your gear, tune in, and let's get after it. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. As I record today's episode, it is Wednesday, May 13th, and this should be airing on Friday, May 15th. As I was getting ready to record this episode, as you guys know, if you listened to last week's episode, you know things have been a little crazy in my life or on my end over here. And I'm finally starting to find my way back to normalcy. I'm finally starting to find some motivation to get out and do stuff again. I've been shooting my bow a lot, which we're going to get to here in just a little bit. But as I was getting ready to record today's episode, I kind of found myself frazzled, to be completely honest. I felt like I couldn't find my camera because the camera that I use to record these episodes, I also use for other things, whether that's filming content or going out in the woods and using it as my second angle or whatever the case may be. So I had gathered all of my camera gear to go out and do some turkey hunting, which I just never ended up getting out to do just yet, but we're going to get there. But I kind of found myself going all over the place, and I found the camera. I got up, I went to go get started, and my trackpad for my Mac wasn't working. For those of you who don't know, a trackpad is essentially the mouse pad on a Mac. Mine is relatively old. It's probably 10 years old now, the trackpad that is. And it's Bluetooth, but it runs off of batteries. It was before they started putting, you know, rechargeable batteries and these kinds of things. And for any of you guys who either have ADD and know about this or don't have ADD, squirrel brain is legit. I said to myself, oh man, I got to run downstairs and get some batteries. So I went downstairs and I let my dog out and I came back upstairs. I said, shit, I forgot the batteries. So I go to go outside again. And when I go out, I go, oh, wait, that plant over there needs to be watered. So I go and I water our money plant. I come back in the office. I sit down. I go, shit, I never got the batteries. I go downstairs to get the batteries again. I end up grabbing something to eat real quick and some water. Come back upstairs. Shit, I forgot to grab the batteries again. So forgive me if this intro is a little, you know, kind of all over the place. My brain is a little bit all over the place, but my goal today is to try to kind of rein myself in and find my center, or my paper tune, if you will. And I want to bring this back to something that I'm familiar with and something I'm passionate on, so that way I can continue to move forward on that path and find my way back to, again, some sense of normalcy, consistency with the podcast and all that good stuff. Now, a couple updates real quick. Well, first off, today's episode is essentially going to be all about the truth sticks. And I'm going to do my best not to make it sales pitchy, because I know you guys don't like to hear that. And quite frankly, I'm not really crazy about hearing that either. So I understand that. But I've been talking about the truth sticks, the arrows that I make, the custom arrows that I build here. And today it finally hit me that I don't really think I ever broke down from the front of the arrow to the back of the arrow Essentially, what makes Truth Sticks so special? What makes Truth Sticks different than any other custom arrow company or builder, whatever you want to call it? So my goal for today is to talk about some different arrow builds and kind of break down the differences and the benefits of the way we build arrows here compared to some of the other ways that arrows are built. Again, I've said this over and over and over again in a whole bunch of different podcasts. My number one goal with this platform is to deliver knowledge, to give you guys the education that you need to then go out in the field and make educated, responsible choices and decisions. You know, I think I've used the analogy of, high FOC arrows or, mechanical broadheads, and everything has a downside. Fixed blades have downsides. Two blades have downsides. Single bevel have downsides. Everything has a downside. In archery, there's no free lunch. So my goal for today is to kind of walk through some different arrow builds and talk about what they give and what they take, and then also talk about what we do differently here at Truth Sticks to make that happen. Now, I'm really happy and really excited to share with you guys that I did some preliminary testing with my PSE Sicario, and at 27 and a half inches at 67 pounds of draw on a 400 grain arrow, my arrow is hitting 305 feet per second. If I bump that up to, you know, max when I crank down the bolts, I think I get up to like 72, 73 pounds. I'm able to hit 309 to 310 feet per second on those arrows. I'm going to put out some content for this. So if you guys want to actually see the visual stuff, you can head over to the Instagram page here in the next few days, and this information should be up there. But my contact in PSE asked me to try something out for them, and they've been hearing from their dealers periodically that they've been able to gain some speed even on top of how fast these bows are simply by adding speed knocks. Now, if you guys aren't familiar with speed knocks, anyone who has a modern day bow, a lot of the bows today, if you look at the top and the bottom of the string, where the string comes off the cams, there's usually some kind of like shrink wrap, whether it's one solid piece of shrink wrap or a couple different pieces with, serving in between. And they got like a bump inside of them. What those bumps are metal knock sets, the old school knock sets that used to be used back in the day on compound bows. They're just essentially knock sets that get put on the string, and they're placed in a strategic position where as that cam is rolling over, that extra weight on the string speeds up the cam's movement and the rollover, in which case then gives you a little bit more speed because those cams are able to roll over more. Well, my contact in PSE asked me if I could please add some speed knocks and do some testing and confirm or deny the fact that we can gain some speeds. Again, when I grabbed the Sicario and shot it perfectly, all factory spec, I hit about 304.5 feet per second, I think. When I swapped them out, or when I added a second speed knock on, I was able to get up to 306 feet per second or 306.3 feet per second or something like that. I can't remember the numbers exactly. And then when I added a third speed knock to those knock groupings, it actually dropped the speed of the bow down to, I think, 302. So when it comes to those speed knocks, there is a very fine line between improvement or loss in performance. Essentially, I was looking for the point of diminished returns, and I found that by adding the third speed knock. Also, keep in mind that every bow is different, and some bows will do better with one set of five. Other bows do better with one speed knock and then another one an inch lower, whatever the case may be. That's the kind of testing that goes into making these compound bows. So that way, when they're released, they know that they're giving you the best performing thing as possible. And then if they get wind of something that could even farther improve it, like adding speed knocks, they ask us to give it a shot and see what we could do. Now, after I put those speed knocks on, I did all the testing that I needed to do with the stock stuff. I was able to strip the stock string off the bow and put my A3 custom strings on. If you guys follow on the Instagram page, I posted a quick little video of what that string looks like, once I put the peep sight in and the D-loop and all that good stuff. Now, once I put the A3 strings on with the same exact knock set setup as the stock strings, I gained about 1.5 to 2 feet per second just by switching strings. And then the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add a speed knock to those custom strings and see if we can't improve the speeds even more. So I'll keep you guys updated on that. And then, I'll let you know how that goes. So with that said, we're going to take a quick brief second here to show our supporters some love. And then we're going to get into the main topic for today. We have the nested tree stand system, tooth of the arrow broadheads, and arrows now. For both companies, you can use code UT10 at checkout to save yourself 10%. Vitalize Seed, Integrated Habitat Solutions, Truth Sticks Custom Arrows, Fireknock, A3 Custom Strings, Rack Getter Scents, Hunt Arsenal, Silver Birch Archery in Milford, Pennsylvania, and the Hunter's Gallery in Hamlin, Pennsylvania. Also, one last note, just to shout out one of the supporters here. Dave over at Integrated Habitat Solutions has been working frivolously to get boots on the ground and really took off getting some work done this year. He's expanded his nursery to over 1,000 trees in stock. He has picked up some work and has done some fantastic planting work and property design management type stuff for different clients. And I know he's looking for a little bit more, you know, so if you guys are looking for a good quality on a land manager or habitat worker, give my man Dave a call over at Integrated Habitat Solutions. And that website is integratedhabitatsolutions.com. All the information you need is over there. And he even offers free consultations. So give him a shout out and let him know I sent you. All right, guys. So with that being said, we're going to start out by talking about the different arrow builds here. And then I'm going to break down a little bit. I'm not going to give away the whole farm because I don't want anybody to steal my idea. But I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a breakdown of the ballistic test that I've been designing and organizing. And I'm almost done building all the arrows that I need to be able to do that test. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's get into the arrows. So you guys know that over the last year and a half, Dorge of Fireknock and I have done quite a few different Signs of Arrow Flight videos and or episodes. And the feedback on them have been pretty good. I just felt like having the same person on over and over and over and over again got a little redundant. So that's why you haven't heard those episodes much. But what I realized today, thinking about the arrows and what I could do to kind of, you know, promote the business a little bit and stuff like that, I realized that I don't think I ever really explained what makes them so great or what makes them so different. If you listen to the Science of Arrow Flight stuff, you get bits and pieces of it from each episode, but it's not all in one place. So that's really what I want to get down or lay down here for you guys today. So let's get started. Let's say you're an archer, you've been shooting for quite some time. You know, you need a new set of arrows. And the way you've always done it, you go to the shop, you have them build your arrows that, you know, they tell you they're done. You go and you pick them up, you go out and you shoot. Here's the way typical shops are going to build your arrows. They're going to take your arrow. They're going to ask you what your draw length is or how long you want your arrow. And they're going to cut it down to that length. Some shops may square the ends. Some shops may not. Fortunately, at the shop that I work at, we all square both ends. It's relatively quick work. And it's a really big step to building consistent arrows that perform well time after time. Once they square off both ends, they're going to take a Q-tip with some alcohol. They're going to run it through just once. They're going to throw it out. And then they're going to, you know, take the insert. They're going to put glue on it and they're going to shove it on in there. Now, if you have arrows like Victory arrows or Black Eagle arrows that label the spine for you, the shop may or may not align, you know, your cock vein to that spine alignment. And the fact that that's there is kind of cool, because, you know, you buy arrows and you think, oh, the spine is right there. Awesome. So they glue the insert, or they cut the arrow down, they square it, they glue the insert on the inside, they put vanes on the back, they put the nock in, and they send you off. And for most people, those arrows may work out well. A lot of guys are not hitting super high speeds on their bows, whether they're a shorter draw length or they're shooting lower weight or they're shooting a heavier arrow. Some archers aren't reaching the speeds where these things make a difference. And the golden number that we've talked about a lot with Dorge is 280 feet per second. So when an arrow hits 280 feet per second, that's where consistency and aerodynamics begin to take over the arrow flight. And then the higher over 280 feet per second that you get, the more important it becomes to have all of that stuff squared away. I don't know if you guys listened to the Let Off podcast at all. We had Lee on the podcast, I think about a year ago now, maybe a little bit less than a year ago, but we had him on and we were talking about all that good stuff. And his recommendation on his podcast is build an arrow as heavy as you need to hit 280 feet per second, because that is the golden number. Maybe people know and maybe people don't, but the reason it's considered the golden number is because 280 feet per second is kind of that tipping point where things start to go awry. And without diving into the physics and without diving into the science of arrow flight, it might be kind of difficult to understand that. And my goal today isn't to complicate things or to go super scientific. In a couple places, we're going to have to, but I'll try to simplify that as much as possible. But without knowing all of that stuff, you hear 280 and you go, okay, great. That's the industry standard. Let's do it. But the truth is, if you can build an aero properly and you can build it aerodynamically and you could build every single aero to be consistent from one aero to the next, then speed doesn't kill you. And that is kind of the main basis of why I really started diving into this science stuff, because I wanted to know, again, what is that point of diminished returns? How fast can I get my aero to fly? And at what point do I start losing control of that aero? So essentially what I just laid out with the build is the general process for just about any type of aero. Now, when you use a 246, you use an insert. When you have a 204, most companies give you a half out. And obviously Easton has their hit inserts. And then your onces, you're going to run an outsert. There's a reason for that. The reason you can use an insert in a 246, but not in a 204 or a 166 diameter aero is because there's not enough real estate on the inside of the shaft to have enough material from the insert to be structural integrity and have enough space left over to have a standard field point fit inside of that aero. So when you go to a 204, they use a half out because half of that insert is inside the aero and half of the insert is outside the aero. And then when you get to a 166, they use an outsert. Some companies have, you know, a little rod that goes inside the shaft a little bit, and then the outside wraps around the outside of the aero. Black Eagle, if I'm not mistaken, actually is licensed to use the Fireknock outsert, which alleviates some of the problems that come with a standard outsert, but we could talk about that. I guess we'll get to it here now. But in my opinion, when it comes to standard builds, a true insert is going to be the most durable when it comes to a hard impact or shooting something on an angle or not, you know, perfectly flush broadside or whatever the case is. I'll be honest with you guys. I've had a really bad experience with half out inserts or half outserts when it comes to a 204. I've had a lot of different arrows break, not even built by me, just arrows in general, where, you know, I make impact with the target at a little bit of an angle. And then I go to pull my arrows out of the target and my half out is stuck inside the target. And there's a little crack running down my shaft. Essentially, what's happening there is when you have an outsert or a half out, think of the part that's sticking outside of your arrow shaft, like the blade of a knife, and the half that's inside of the arrow shaft, like the handle of your knife. And if you take that knife and try to stab something at an angle, the knife's going to want to kick. You know, the handle side is going to want to kick and straighten out that knife. Well, the same thing happens with your arrow, except your arrow is flying a heck of a lot faster and it's got a heck of a lot more energy behind it. So when it hits like that, that torque can essentially crack your arrow and force that half out to come out. So me personally here at Truth Sticks, I'll be honest with you guys, I'm really not interested in using half outs simply because I have a hard time putting my name on something that I don't personally believe in. So what I use instead is Door just come up with essentially a Fireknock version of the hit insert that we're able to pair and marry to those tubes that go on the inside of the arrow. Now, before I go any farther, I'm going to now break down the way we build Truth Sticks arrows here and how, never mind FOC and all that stuff, we'll get to that here in a little bit, but how just the simple building process of how we do things is different from the standard building process that you would get at any old archery shop that you walk into. When it comes to, let's use a 246 for now, and then we'll go to the 204 and the 166 to, you know, give you a little bit of insight into all three of them. But when I build a 246 arrow, the insert gets glued to the tube that goes inside of the arrow first. That's the very first thing that we do. And while that's curing, I'm now going to take my arrow shaft. I'm going to spin it on a spinner, and I'm going to see which side wobbles more than the other. Now, my arrows are cut down to 26 3/4 inches because I have a 27.5 inch draw length. We cut all of our arrows 3/4 inch shorter than the draw length unless a customer requests something otherwise. So given a 32-inch full-length shaft, I have roughly 5 1/4 inches to work with. So essentially what I like to do is I find the side of the arrow that wobbles the least, and I cut 1 inch off of that side. And the other side, I cut the remaining length off of. So that way I could cut more off of the side that isn't as sturdy. And the side that wobbles a little bit by cutting off that inch, it should in theory better that wobble just a little bit. Which, for the record, side note, and this might upset a couple people, the least important spec of an arrow when you're building it, if you build it properly, is straightness. And I know that's a controversial statement, but I've seen it firsthand. Most of the arrows I build, for myself anyway, are 0.003 straightness. I've never had a problem with accuracy. I've never had a problem with anything like that. You know, so if you build the arrows properly and you take care of all of the other variables, which we're going to touch on in the rest of this conversation, then the lack of perfectly straight arrows, for lack of a better way to put it, isn't as important because all of the other variables make up the difference. Again, for lack of a better way to put it. So I spin the arrows. I cut them off on both ends. I cut less off the better side, more off of the worse side. Once they're cut off, I then take a wire brush, like a bore cleaning brush, and I put it on my drill bit and I run it in and out of my shaft a few times to scuff up the inside of my shaft. Because if I'm going to glue a tube on the inside, I want something inside. I want some kind of abrasion on the inside that the glue can grab onto and give it a little bit more hold, if you will. And I do the same thing to the inner tubes that get glued in also. So I'd lightly sand the inner tubes. I lightly sand the inside of the shafts. So that way when I glue them, both sides are kind of scuffed up, almost like scoring clay in school when you had to, you know, stick two pieces of clay together and get them to be permanent. So once I scuff up the inside of the shaft, I then take a bore brush, not the wire brush, but like the cloth brush that you would use to oil up or to clean out the inside of your barrel. I get the right size for the arrow that I'm using and I clean the entire inside of the shaft with acetone. I don't like using Q-tips. I got to waste a whole bunch and it takes way too much time. I like to be as efficient as possible. I want things to be as quick as possible, as efficient as possible, and as accurate as possible from arrow to arrow. So once I take care of all that stuff and the insert that I glued into those inner tubes are cured and ready to be glued, we use 2-part epoxy, we mix it together, and we glue the inner tube into the arrow. Now, the important thing is when these arrows are drying, when the glue is curing, we stand them upright. So that way, as it's drying, that inner tube can be as concentric as it could possibly be. I've talked about this before on the podcast, so I'll just touch on it really quick. Another cool feature of the FireKnock inserts is on the very, very backside of the lip of the insert that sits on the edge of the arrow that was squared, there is an angle, it's a bevel on the inside of that rim. And then we also reverse bevel the inside, or I think we end them backwards. I think the insert has a reverse bevel, and then we add a bevel to the front of the arrow shaft. So that way, when you glue the arrow together and when you glue that inner tube and the insert into the arrow, the chamfer, sorry, not bevel. I don't know why I said bevel. It's a chamfer. The chamfer from the arrow marries the reverse chamfer on the inside of that arrow, of that insert, and it locks the insert in place. And what that does is it doesn't allow, all of us have shot an arrow before that hit something hard and the point of the arrow goes in an inch or two into the shaft. And your shaft is no good anymore. That arrow is no good anymore. The reason that happens is because in flight and on impact, your arrow is mushrooming and it is elongating and coming back to circular and elongating and coming back to circular. And when it makes impact with something hard, what happens is the front of the arrow stops moving, but the back of the arrow wants to continue moving forward, which expands the diameter of the arrow just enough for the insert to slide into the arrow. Well, by having that chamfer married to the reverse chamfer in the insert, that stops the arrow from being able to do that, and it protects the front of the arrow on a hard impact more than just a standard insert will. Okay, so now we have the inner tube glued onto the inside of the arrow, and that's pretty much where most of the magic happens when it comes to the TruthSticks custom arrows. Now, we do use FireKnock vanes. We've talked about these before. I'm pretty sure we actually posted a video on that. And I think that might have been one of the two or three last ones that we posted before I didn't post any more of those science series things. FireKnock offers two different vanes. One is the Arrow Vane 2 and the other one is the Arrow Vane 3. They're both airfoils, which means the way they function is, to make it as simple as possible, essentially the way that they're designed, they don't work off of drag. So they don't need a helical or an offset to work. You fletch them straight And the way they function is the left side of the vein creates a high pressure pocket and the right side of the vein creates a low pressure pocket. And just like a plane does, anything flying through air is going to move away from resistance and take the path of least resistance. So if you're creating more pressure on the left side and less pressure on the right, it's going to force the arrow to turn. Now, where the beautiful thing is in this is if the faster your arrow goes, the more revolutions you're going to have in your arrow. Now, I know one of the things you guys are going to ask me about or think about in this moment is parachuting, and we're going to get to that in a little bit because I do want to keep going back and forth if possible. And then, of course, we use fire knock knocks. They're virgin flow, single cavity molds, which essentially means if there's any leftover material when he makes the knocks, he doesn't melt it down and reuse it. He throws it away because every time you re-melt plastic or polymer or whatever the material is, it adds impurities, which can then change the consistency of the arrow or the knock, and then your arrows aren't going to perform the same from arrow to arrow. And the single mold essentially is when you inject liquid into a mold, you inject it from one side and expect the fluid to flow all the way to the other. Well, no matter how perfect you have everything set up, the farthest point that liquid has to reach is going to receive the coolest temperature liquid, which means that the knocks are not going to cure at the same temperature or the same rate, which again is going to create inconsistencies. So what they've done over a fire knock is he has made single cavity virgin flow molds that give him the best or the highest consistency in these knocks from knock to knock as possible. Real quick, I'll touch on the 204 and the 166 as well. I told you guys for the 204, I don't like to use a half out. I use the hit insert. And for the 166, I like to use a full outsert. But the fire knock version where it's got the piece that goes on the inside and the outside of the shaft. And what that does essentially is it takes the weakest point of the arrow or the weakest link of the arrow, basically where the field point ends, where those threads of whatever tip you're putting on the arrow and the carbon starts. That's why it's called an outsert, because the entire field point or broadhead that you're using is completely outside of the shaft of the arrow. The problem with that is, again, just like the knife example we used before, that becomes the weak point of the arrow because there's nothing inside of the shaft to secure it and to give it stability and rigidity. So by having a post that goes into the shaft and then also a sleeve that covers the outside, you're securing the arrow from the inside and the outside and taking that weak point and creating a strong point from it. So now we've talked about the differences in the building, you know, how a standard arrow is built and then how a true stick custom arrow is built. But what does it all matter? If you guys don't know the benefit or what you're gaining from this building process, what do you get out of it? I even forgot I missed some stuff. Like I said, guys, I got squirrel brain today. I apologize. Within the building process for the True Sticks arrows, I weight match all of the components within 2/10 of each other. You know, so if one insert is 8.1 grains, another insert is 8.2 grains, those two go together. If I get a third insert that's 8.3 grains, that's going into a different pile and will be paired with the 8.4 grain inserts that I get. And I try to do that with all the components. I do that with the inner tubes. Although I get full length tubes and cut them down myself. So since the tubes all come from the same stock, they should all have the same GPI. I don't often have an issue with that at all, which is really nice. But what I'm getting at is I weight batch everything. So that way your dozen arrows are getting components that are as close in weight to each other as possible. And then the biggest part of this entire process that I completely missed is, and I think I've talked about this before. Actually, I did. I had Mitch and I talked about this on the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast that I joined him on. I think it aired about 3 weeks ago now. A typical spine tester is going to take the things that the arrow sits on and they're set 28 inches apart. Doesn't matter how long your arrow is, you set them 28 inches apart and then you put a 2.3 pound or whatever, 1.8 pound weight in the middle, and it pulls this thing down and it tells you where the weakest or the strongest part of the arrow is. And that's what we call the spine. But every arrow doesn't bend at the spine when you take a shot. The arrow wants to bend at what is called the first dynamic bend. And the only way to do that or to find that first dynamic bend is to take those posts and move them all the way to the end of your arrow and have the pressure point be right in the center. So again, I shoot a 26 3/4 inch arrow. So I take those posts that the arrow sits on, I set it to, let's say, 26.5 inches, put the post that the arrow sits on as far apart as possible. So now it's making contact with the arrow on the both farthest ends. And then we use a device where we push down with our hand and we feel the arrow, where that arrow wants to settle the most. Where that arrow wants to settle the most is where the arrow is going to flex first on release. And when we fletch those with the cock vein facing that deep point every single time. So when you fire every single arrow, the very first flex on launch is going to be in the exact same direction every single time. And more often than not, that inconsistent flex direction off launch is going to change course of your arrow. And that's essentially going to be the thing that makes your arrows fly inconsistently from one arrow to the next. So the entire approach to building True Sticks custom arrows is all built towards consistency. They're built towards making sure every single arrow is built identical to the other. And they're built in a way that improves arrow performance without having to add weight or add speed to your bow and all that good stuff. Now, what I wanted to get into before is, again, if you guys don't know why this stuff is important, then there is no value in a custom set of arrows that are built this way. So I think it's important to share that with you. So here's what happens to an arrow when it launches. When you're at full draw and you launch an arrow, on the shot break, your arrow is going to compress and flex on your arrow rest, and then your arrow needs to recover from that flex as it's flying through the air. The less you can get your arrow to flex on launch, the faster your arrow is going to recover. And one of the ways that a lot of guys try to mitigate this, the magnitude of the flex or how high or low that arrow flexes, is by using a stiffer spine. And I'm not going to lie, to an extent that does work, but again, you're giving something up. When you shoot a stiffer spine than you have to, first off, there is a point of diminished returns where you get too stiff and the next thing you know, you can't get your bow to tune. That does happen. But the other side of that too is as you drop down in spine or as your spine gets stiffer, you're adding weight to your arrow that you don't necessarily have to add. Now, for you guys who have 29, 30, 31, 32 inch draw lengths, you guys are blessed. Doesn't matter what arrow you use or how heavy your arrow is because you have the speed. But for guys like me, I don't want to use a heavier arrow than I need to. I'm looking for ways to cut weight without dropping below the overall weight that I would like to be at. For me personally, I probably wouldn't shoot an arrow under 400 grains at a deer, but this summer's ballistics test might change my mind on that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So essentially, your arrow is now flexing off of the arrow or off the bow, and there's multiple different factors that go into that. The higher your let off, so if you're someone who shoots 90% let off, you're going to induce more flex into your arrow in the form of micro flex. We've talked about that plenty on the podcast before. The higher your let off, the more micro flex you're going to put into that arrow and the harder your arrow needs to work in flight to recover. The lower your let off, the less micro flex you add in. And there's all different factors that go into that. We don't need to get into that right now. We've covered that actually in the past. Now imagine your arrow's been flying for 22 yards, 23 yards, your arrow is recovered and now it makes impact. Well, the front of the arrow wants to stop moving while the back of the arrow wants to continue moving. So again, on impact, that moment of impact is going to induce flex into your arrow again. And that flex on impact can affect your ability to penetrate that animal if the arrow is not built correctly. So how do different arrow builds affect this? Well, a standard arrow that is built without, you know, anything on the inside of the shaft or anything like that, the thicker the arrow walls, the more it's going to flex on launch. Well, maybe that's not true. But when we're talking about standard built arrows, the different arrow diameters are going to change the way your arrow behaves in flight. We've talked about this before. George and I actually did like a full episode on 300 and 246 arrows, and then another full episode on 204 and 166. We've covered that pretty well. But to summarize it for you, the The smaller your arrow diameter, the fatter your arrow walls. And the faster the arrow wall, the longer it takes to recover from flex in the air. Now, again, on a standard built arrow, whether you're using a 166, 204, 246, 300, the arrow takes anywhere from 18 to 23 yards to recover, which means if you shoot at a deer at 15 yards, your arrow is still flexing from the launch. It never had a chance to recover. So when it makes impact with that animal, it's going to be even worse because it's not hitting at a state of calmness, if you will. I don't even know what adjective to use there. Another factor that affects this is FOC. The higher your FOC, again, we've covered this pretty well, but the higher your FOC, the farther the back of your arrow needs to move at launch before the front of the arrow begins to move. So what happens is the higher your FOC, the bigger the flex in your arrow before it leaves your bow. And then in flight, the more flex that it needs to recover from. And all of this flex is bleeding energy from your arrow because your arrow needs to take the energy that it would use to fly straight and use it to get your arrow to stop moving in the air. Also on impact with a high FOC arrow, the back of the arrow is like a wet noodle and the front of the arrow has all the weight, it has all the structure, it has all the rigidity. So when a high FOC arrow hits, and I've seen this in slow motion, you can go to the Ranch Fairy page. He posted something about 2 months ago where they shot a pig with a 650 grain arrow. And don't get me wrong, it penetrated. But you can see on camera, in super high speed slow motion, the moment the very tip of the broadhead touches the pig, the back of the arrow starts to wobble again. And this is where the problem comes into play. Because what we're doing with high FOC arrows is we're trying to put the weight in the front of the arrow to help make your arrow more forgiving. Because whether your arrow is not built properly or the bow isn't tuned properly or the arrow is not coming out, you know, straight or whatever the case may be, we're adding weight to the front of the arrow to give us forgiveness and to correct that stuff. Also, adding weight to the front of your arrow or getting a high FOC usually results in a heavier arrow overall. A heavier arrow is going to fly slower, which means if you drop below that 280 feet per second mark, a lot of the things we're talking about today don't really matter, with the exception of more oscillation or more flex in flight and an arrow that wants to break down on impact. And then, of course, we have all this extra weight to help with the impact because heavier objects have more momentum and blah, 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 you know. And the question that it's led me to ask myself is, well, if I need to add all of this weight to get the arrow to fly this way, and I need to add all this weight to get the arrow to penetrate, but all of these negative things come with it, how efficient is that arrow actually? And how much am I really gaining from bumping that FOC up compared to building an arrow that flies perfectly straight, doesn't break down on impact, is forced from the inside with a tube? And that's kind of the basis of the ballistic test that I'm going to be running this summer. And we're going to table that here for a second, because I do have a little bit more to talk about with the arrows. And I'm going to try to finish off quickly here because this is actually longer than I wanted it to be. But what those inner tubes do for the arrow is something really cool. And this is where I have to go into a little bit of science, but I'm going to keep it as simple as I can. A lot of guys who have heard about these arrows or heard about this building process feel like when you put the tube on the inside of the arrow, it's stiffening the front of the arrow, which doesn't allow the arrow to flex as much. To an extent, it does reinforce the front of the arrow. It does give it a little bit more rigidity. It does help out with that. But that's actually not where the benefit of the arrows come from, or the benefit of this building process comes from. Now, when you put an arrow into, when you put a inner tube into the arrow, we call that the arrow concept. And when you put one tube in the front, it's arrow concept 1.0. And when you glue a second tube into the back half of the arrow, it's called arrow concept 2.0. And that is the arrow build that I have personally gravitated to, because I am not a huge fan of high FOC. I want a balanced arrow, and that's the best way to get it. But here's how the True Sticks arrows work with the scientific building process and the arrow concept building process. When you glue that tube to the inside of the arrow, the inner tube is made of a different carbon than the arrow shaft is, a different modulus, a different, I don't want to say quality because I don't know if that's the right word to use, but a different class, if you will, of carbon is used to make the inner tubes compared to arrow shafts. which means they're going to react to energy differently and they're going to flex at a different rate. And by using the two-part epoxy to glue the inner tubes into the arrow, it serves two jobs. The first job is to obviously make sure that the glue can hold that arrow, the inner tube in place under the pressure of impact over and over and over and over again. But where the magic happens is the two-part epoxy is strong enough to hold the inner tube in place, but it also is able to flex with the arrow. So now picture this, you take a shot, your arrow wants to flex as it's shot. The outer carbon, your carbon shaft, wants to flex at one rate and the inner tube wants to flex at a different rate. And what happens is those two different rates of flex cancel each other out. So remember I said before that a standard built arrow takes anywhere from 18 to 23.4 yards to recover? Arrow Concept 1.0 is recovered by 8 feet. And Arrow Concept 2.0, given you have a second tube in the back that's mitigating that flex from both ends of the arrow, it recovers even faster. On launch, those arrows are flexing less, they recover faster. And now you have the arrow vanes on the back that are spinning your arrow at such a high rate that it takes the arrow and it puts it on a perfectly straight trajectory almost instantly. I mean, in the world of archery, 8 feet is relatively instantly. And that allows the arrow to fly true as well. Now, while we're on the topic of those vanes, I said I was going to talk about parachuting. And for those of you who don't know, parachuting is essentially the phenomenon that happens at long-range shooting when the drag of the vanes overcome the forward movement of the arrow. And you'll see a really weird quick drop in your arrow where it changes vertical height very, very quickly. And again, that's because the drag of the vanes are overcoming the forward progress of your arrow. Well, since the arrow vanes don't work off of drag, they work as an airfoil, they can travel a lot farther before that parachuting effect takes place. Because nothing has no drag. These vanes still have a face, you know, they still go through air. There's going to be some kind of drag. But because they're not offset, they're fletched straight. And because they don't purposely induce drag, they mitigate as much drag as possible. That ballooning effect either doesn't happen at the ranges you shoot, or you can get a heck of a ways out there before that ballooning effect happens, which is really cool. I mean, it's really great to know that I can shoot high speed, I can shoot really fast revolution and not have to worry about it. On impact, now, you know, we went through the building process, the flight, we go to impact. Remember, I said if an arrow isn't built properly or an arrow has a super high FOC, the arrow wants to flex on impact, which is going to bleed energy as the arrow slaps against the side of the hole that the broadhead of the field point made, bleeding energy as it's trying to go through. Well, since these arrows have the inner tube on the front and they mitigate that flex as fast as possible, I'm not going to say that there's no flex on impact because there is, but there's so much less than a standard arrow build that the arrows, in theory, perform way more efficiently than a standard built arrow or a heavy FOC built arrow or whatever other arrow you can think of. So I say all of this to bring it all home and say that the whole point of all of this is that I got to thinking, if an arrow can be built to recover as fast as possible and an arrow can be built to bleed as little energy in flight as possible and an arrow can be built to stay as straight as possible on impact, then that arrow, in theory, should be the most efficient type of arrow. What I mean by most efficient is it uses the least amount of energy and has the most momentum remaining after passing through that animal. So what I've decided to do for this summer is I want to do a ballistic test that tests all of this. And I'm going to be doing a couple different arrow builds, a couple different arrow diameters. And this is essentially the structure of how I'm going to do it. I'm going to shoot 9 Victory HLR 204 inside diameter arrows. 3 of them are going to be Arrow Concept 2.0, so tube front and back. 3 of them are going to be Arrow Concept 1.0, just a tube in the front. And the 3 are going to be just a standard built arrow, no inner tube at all, but I'm going to use just a regular old insert. Now, I'm going to use the same arrow vanes on all of the arrows just to keep as many variables the same. Now, the really cool thing about the 204 inner tubes and the reason I'm using the 204s specifically is because Dorge offers 2 different weights for the inner tubes on a 204. And the lighter version are about 24 grains per tube. So my Aero Concept 2.0, let's say, is 400 grains. When I take the rear tube out, I can change the field point from a 100 to a 125 grain point and effectively have the same weight aero. And what that's going to allow me to do is going to allow me to show you the difference in launch speed, because my theory is that a balanced aero is going to launch faster than an unbalanced aero that flexes more on launch. And then when I take the second tube out and I shoot it without any tubes, I'm going to be shooting 150 grain aero up front. Now, each of these builds is going to slightly increase FOC, but the weights are going to be the same. So that's going to show me, one, how does the launch speed change? And two, given the exact same aero shaft on the exact same weight, the exact same length, and the exact same vanes and knock, the only difference is the tubes on the inside and the FOC percentage, how does that change how effective an aero performs when it needs to? Then I'm going to build a heavier 204, just three, out of a tooth of the aero shaft, and I'm going to build that in Aero Concept 2.0, and I want to compare how a heavier, slower aero performs compared to a lighter, faster aero of the exact same build. And then last but not least, I'm going to shoot an Aero Concept 2.0 246 diameter aero to test whether aero diameter really makes a difference when it comes to aero efficiency. Once I do all of that, I'm probably going to rerun the tests again with some broadheads to show you the difference between field points and broadheads. Because another thing that that we're trying to test this summer is that aero diameter doesn't matter as much as your vane choice, how much drag it produces, and the vanes that you use and how they influence the air around it as they're flying has more of an effect on wind drift than aero diameter does. Also, given that you have most broadheads today have at least, not most, all broadheads have at least a 1-inch cutting diameter, if I'm not mistaken. And the fattest arrow that anyone is probably going to use for hunting is a 300 inside diameter arrow. It's still less than half an inch outside diameter. So if you're shooting a 100-inch or greater broadhead, it's making a hole that's fatter than the arrow shaft itself is. So in theory, the arrow shaft diameter shouldn't matter as much if your broadhead is making a very decent cut. And before I accept these as fact or law in arrow building, I want to get out on the range and I want to do some ballistics tests. And once I'm done with that, I'm going to have all the data to put on the screen and show you guys. And you're not just going to have to take my word for it. The results are going to be in the pudding, if you will. So a couple points here before I wrap this up. I want to clarify a couple things. I'm not saying that a high FOC arrow can't be effective. I'm not saying it isn't effective at all. What I'm saying as far as FOC or heavy arrows in general are concerned is you're giving up speed and trajectory and forgiveness on shot placement to gain more momentum or kinetic energy. The thing that we need to realize is momentum and kinetic energy are products of the relationship between speed and weight. As you gain speed, you lose weight. I've done this on this podcast before. I think I pulled up the numbers. I think if you take a 650 grain arrow traveling at 230 feet per second, a 400 grain arrow traveling at 300 feet per second, think the kinetic energy was within like 7 pounds per inch or something like that. Again, I don't have the numbers right in front of me right now. I've done that in the past, but they were really, really close to each other. So the whole reason I'm doing all of this is because if at launch, both arrows have very similar energy capabilities and one arrow bleeds energy in flight more than the other, and one arrow bleeds energy on impact more than the other, when it's all said and done and the arrow goes through the other side of the animal, which arrow still has the higher percentage of energy left that it had when it launched out of your bow? Because that's what we should care about. Because at the end of the day, it only takes 20 of kinetic energy to have a complete pass through on a deer. But some of these super high, not even FOC, just these heavy arrows in general, 650 grain arrows, you're pushing 92, 93 foot pounds per inch on kinetic energy. I mean, it's a lot of excessive energy that you're getting and giving up, again, speed, trajectory, forgiveness on the shot, all that good stuff, you know? So again, I really did my best here to try not to make this sales pitch. I really tried to keep it information based, but I guess the truth of the fact is if if I'm someone building the arrows and I'm giving information on them, it's kind of hard to stay completely away from the sales pitchy thing. So I really do want to apologize for that. But if you're dead set on using a heavy arrow, if you're dead set on using a heavy FOC arrow, if you're dead set on just building arrows yourself, there are a couple things that you can do to ensure that your arrows are as consistent as possible. Make sure you're squaring both ends of your arrow. Make sure that when you cut your arrow down, you're cutting more off the wobbly side and less off of the less wobbly side. Make sure that when you're building the arrows, you find a way to find the true dynamic bend where that arrow wants to flex first and fletch all of your arrows to that. Because I don't know if this is going to air as a video. Maybe I'll post this on Instagram. Let me give you an example here. So I tried to strip these arrows, the labeling off of them, so I could put my own label on them. Some of them came off and some of them didn't. And at first I was kind of upset about it, but I'm actually happy that that happened because I can show you guys that the spine align markings on an arrow are not consistent once you cut the arrow down. You guys got to realize that when they find the spine of the arrow in the factory, the arrow is 32 inches long. When you cut it down to your length, the spine is not guaranteed to be in the same location anymore. And that's because the spine rotates around the arrow. And it doesn't rotate like a corkscrew. It might be a gradual rotation around it, but it does rotate around. Think of if the rifling of a rifle barrel was on the outside of the barrel and what that would look like. That's essentially what your spine is doing. Now, if you look at this first arrow here, we have the spinal line marker right here that didn't come off. And if you look at my cock vein, it aligns pretty darn well with where that spine align marker is. But now if I take this next arrow and I show you where that spine alignment marker is, that spine alignment marker is facing the screen right now. And if I go over to the side, the cock vein is about, I wouldn't say 90 degrees away from it, but about 45 degrees away from that spine alignment marker. And that's why it's so important to have something that can show you where the spine of your arrow is. Because if you're going just off of the factory arrows, and I get it, guys, if you can't afford it, or you don't have the means to do it, or you don't have the know-how how to do it, I understand that. But just keep in mind that if you're just going off of the factory arrows and you're aligning every single one to that spine, it may not give you consistent flight from arrow to arrow. I'll be honest with you guys, there's a lot that goes into this stuff and I feel like I'm forgetting a little something. But at the end of the day, that's essentially the basis of it. The way we build arrows here is to try to give you an arrow that can mitigate as many of variables as possible at launch, in flight, and on impact, to give you an arrow that delivers as much of the energy as it can from your bow to the arrow and then to the animal that you're shooting at. We covered a lot of stuff here today, guys. So if there's anything you're interested in or you have any questions on, we have a couple options. First, you can always leave a comment down below. You can reach out to me on Instagram. That's wingandtail.outdoors. I believe that's the Instagram handle. You can reach out to me at email at wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. Or you can head over to our website, which is, I would say, 85% finished finally. That has literally taken a backseat to just about everything, but I'm almost there. But a lot of the information is on there. There are some illustrations and diagrams on there to help you understand some of the things that I talked about today. And there's a lot of information about the different things that happen to an arrow at launch and in flight. It's a really good resource and a great place to get some information. But if you have any questions, if you're interested in learning more, or you're interested in talking about a custom arrow build for yourself, please reach out to me, leave a comment down below, get in touch with me somehow, and we'll be sure to get you the information or the arrows that you're looking for. That's all I got today, guys. I want to thank you for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast. I hope you got a lot out of today's conversation. Maybe you learned some things that you didn't know about, or maybe you think I'm full of bullshit and you want to wait for that ballistics test to come out to see what this is all about. Whatever the case is, thanks for joining us here today. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. God bless. Have a great week.